So as a very short recap, what we are doing here is trying to answer the question on whether some problems are easier than other, or they are all as equally hard, to keep things a little simpler. We are focusing on what are called decision problems, yes-no questions. So the question is, are decision problems simpler than others? Well, you already can answer that question, right? You know that some decision problems are decidable, some are not. So we have at least one classification of decision problems. Interestingly, even among the undecidable problems, you've probably seen also that some of them are easier than other. There are simpler undecidable problems than other. How can that be? Well, there are some undecidable problems which are recursively enumerable. Did you see that notion? The idea being that even though for some problem we cannot decide whether the answer is yes or no, we can at least decide when the answer is yes. It's better than nothing. There are some problems which we can't even do that. Now, then more precisely, what we are looking at here is the question of whether among the decidable problems, some are simpler than others. And seems like a natural question to do in computer science, and as you know, the answer is not so clear. We will give a precise answer in the upcoming weeks. We will see that, in fact, as the intuition suggests, there are simpler problems than others, but it's not always simple to realize that. And what we are doing towards answering this question is looking at properties that a solution to a problem can have. Properties here being the time that one needs to solve a problem in with the best algorithm, or the space that we need to use when solving this problem, and we are also using determinism to say, okay, is it possible that there are some problems which have a simpler solution if we allow non-determinism? There are also other dimensions one can explore in order to try to capture differences among problems. One could ask, for instance, is this problem simple, or can I get a very good speed up if I try to solve it using many computers in parallel? Maybe some problems seem to have that property and others don't, but we'll focus on these three, time, space, and determinism. It's not clear that only because we can define one of these classes automatically characterizes certain complexity. We will see on Friday that there are some complexity classes that could, in principle, have been disjoint, but instead are the same. We will see examples of complexity classes that collapse into one. That we will do on Friday, and on next week, I think, you will see examples of complexity classes that are essentially different, and from which we can show that there are problems which are harder than than others. Now, one you're familiar, of course, with the more common complexity classes, namely P and NP. You've seen them before. And one complexity class we've defined in the last lectures was the one called L. L being the class of problems that can be solved by a Turing machine using space that is logarithmic on the size of the input, and similarly for NL is the same for non-deterministic Turing machine. Now, when one looks at this complexity class L, it seems a little arbitrary and also hard to grasp what's the intuition behind it. What does it mean that we use a space logarithmic on the input on a Turing machine? We never program Turing machines. It seems sort of odd. But one intuition that you can use, which is a sound intuition, is this. Suppose that your input is a string or an array, whatever, of size n. This is your input. If you have only log n bits, these bits are enough to identify each position of the array. Okay, because this array has this cell is cell n, and with log n bits we can describe up to n. So log n bits are essentially a pointer to the input, or with log n bits we can describe a pointer to the input. And one intuition that you can use is that with this restriction, space limited to c times log n, what it means is that we only have c pointers to the input, a constant number of pointers to the input, and that's it. So if you want to think of it in terms of a RAM machine or Java or C, whatever, these are problems which you can solve using pointer variables, and that's it. You cannot use new or malloc. You cannot ask for an array of nothing. You cannot have recursion because, you've already seen to implement recursion, you use a stack, and in a stack you can save more and more and more variables, so it would be violating that principle. And that's it. One can do this, show this equivalence more formally, but already formalizing what it means to have a RAM program without malloc or without new will be a little awkward. But you can do this as a guiding principle. If you can solve a problem using only variables without allocating memory, then it is in log space. You have, of course, many examples of problems with that property. Simplest one, I don't know, linear search in an array, of course, is in log space, because the only thing we need to find an element doing a linear search or a binary search or whatever is just a variable holding the position we are looking so far, and that's a pointer to the input. We don't even need to have an array. If you want to think of, again, search in a binary search tree, that also only needs a pointer with which we travel the tree. That's also in log space. There are many, many, many examples. And what this means is that you already saw that a simple argument shows that this inclusion needs to hold, because with only this space, we have polynomially many configurations the machine can have if it doesn't loop. And the inclusion here is not known. And this question, the question of whether the classes L and P coincide, it has a much less esoteric phrasing as, is it true or not that any problem that can be solved in polynomial time can be solved also without allocating more memory? I don't know, could be yes, could be no, but in principle it's a question that makes sense. And in NL we just add non-determinism. We'll come back to non-determinism later today. What we will do today sounds a little boring, but we will look again one problem. It was already defined last week, and we'll look at different ways of solving it under different constraints. This problem is the problem of finding whether two points in a graph are connected. And the reason we are going to focus on this problem and devise several algorithms to solve it is that we will exploit it several times next class to answer some of these questions of whether two complexity classes are the same or not. We will be able to give positive answers. We will show that some classes are the same, and we will use for that this reachability algorithm. When writing algorithms working on graphs, it makes a difference in terms of the complexity of the algorithm. What's the representation of the graph? This is not a crucial difference. For different representations, we need to use different algorithms if we are trying to guarantee certain complexity. But just to keep things precise, let's assume and fix a representation, and then make sure that our algorithms have the right complexity according to it. So, so what we will use is adjacency matrices, right? A matrix where a Boolean matrix, if you want, where at each coordinate we have a one if and only if there is a path from the element naming the row to the element naming the column. So let's write this. So let's say we have a graph. A directed graph. And let's assume that the elements are numbered from zero on. B0, blah, blah, blah. BK minus one, let's say, yeah. The adjacency matrix of G is a Boolean matrix, as I said. Of a dimension, a square matrix of k times k, where k is the number of nodes we have, such that in position ij of the matrix, we have a 1 if and only if node I is connected to node J. And as you well know, as C programmers or whatever, a matrix can be represented using an array or a string for that matter. And that's what we will typically assume. So we can represent an adjacency matrix with a string and and we shall assume it this representation in all the algorithms we see today. So that's for the input. Then we recall what the problem was. It was given a name. It was called path. So this was already defined, but let's just recall it. So path is the set of tuples GST, G being a graph as a matrix, ST being two nodes of the graph, such that there is a path from S to T in J, of course. In G. So this is how we represent our problem, are all the inputs for which the answer is yes. Now, how complex is this problem? Well, the first thing I will say is, I'm sure it's not something new for you. You've seen it in any algorithms course. This problem can be solved in polynomial time. It's a typical graph algorithm. It is solved using a depth first search. So let's just prove it, where the proof will be essentially just recall what's the graph algorithm, what graph algorithm we can use for this. And the idea is, so we do a classical depth first search. The problem with looking for a path in this graph is that the graph may contain cycles, and we don't want to get lost in cycles. So what we use is an additional table to mark what nodes we have already visited. That's how we break the loops. So so use an additional table to mark visited nodes. So let's actually give the algorithm. So we want to write a function that takes a graph, 2 points, and returns true if and only if S is reachable from T is reachable from S. And well, the first thing we need to know is how many nodes this graph has. This is, of course, the square root of the size of G. Remember that the input is assumed to be an array representing the matrix. So this here tells us how long the array is. And if we take the square root of that, we know what's the size of the matrix. So that's the number of nodes. Then we will need also this table where we mark which nodes we visited. So I will call it scene nodes. It's an array of size n. And it's initialized with all zeros. Initially, we didn't see any node. And now what we do is use a recursive function that visits all nodes reachable from S and marks them on this array. So I will define this function in a moment. I call it mark reachable from. So the idea is that after, when this function terminates, what we have is that this table has a one if and only if the node that contains a one is reachable from S. So if that holds, then we just return we look at position T and check whether if it's reachable or not. So now what we need to do is define this function, the function that marks all nodes reachable from S. And the idea is simple. So the idea is that now we are trying to mark all the nodes reachable from node V. So in particular, B is reachable from B in zero steps. So we can just We can just say B has already, B is reachable. And now we iterate over all nodes. And whenever we have a node that is reachable in one step from B, we are using the adjacency matrix here. And it was not seen. Then we recurse over it. So we are essentially traversing all the graph as we can, and using this table here to avoid an infinite recursion. I've written the algorithm in a RAM machine pseudocode, but by now we should be more or less confident that this can be translated into a Turing machine. The only thing we need to do is, on a Turing machine, we need to use one tape to implement the recursion stack. But that is essentially it. Then what one sees is that by the construction, this function mark reachable from, it's called at most once per node, because the only way that the function is called is that the node was not marked in this table, and the first thing that is done once the function is called is marking the node. So mark reachable from is called at most once. Per node, and these are all tests which in a RAM machine are in constant time. In a Turing machine, they take linearly many steps, and this also takes linearly many steps. So the body takes polynomially many steps, and the whole construction is polynomial. So that's it. That's our algorithm. As I said, it shouldn't be something new. This shows that path is in P. It's solved in polynomial time. Now the strange thing is that this requires linear space to be executed. Why? Well, we are allocating this array of linear size at the very beginning. So again, the question of L being equal or not to P can be instantiated to, can this algorithm be written in with less than linear space usage? The answer is not known. But we can still write it with at least less space. So this algorithm requires linear space. It would be very cool if we could write it with a logarithmic space. We can't, but we can do better. And now one thing that happens is that as computer scientists, we are trained to optimize time. And here what we are trying to optimize in what we are going to do next is space. So when we do that, algorithms become a little less intuitive, but let's try to see what we can do. So here the space is, the space usage is linear. We can show that also we can solve it with space that is C times logarithm of n squared. So this is still not, this doesn't put path in L. This is much more than logarithmic, but already is a huge improvement. Now, how can we do this? Well, the idea is that we will use again a divide and conquer algorithm, and intuitively the idea is this. Let's say we want to know if from one node B we can reach in at most k steps some node B prime. Let's say we are interested in finding out this question. This means we can reach from B to B prime in at most k steps. There are three possibilities. One is that k is zero and B is B prime. If this is the case, the answer is yes. Another possibility is that we can reach from B to B prime in one step. That also gives us the answer immediately. And for the third, we can, this happens if there exists some additional node U with the property that from B we can reach U in at most k over 2, rounded up, let's say. And from u, we can arrive to b prime in chi over 2, rounded down. So if it's not the same node, and it's not an immediate successor, then there must be some node in the middle. This is what this is saying. And we can actually assume that we reach the node we can pick the node which is in the precise middle of the two, and then this will hold. Using this intuition, we can devise a divide and conquer algorithm. So we use a divide and conquer algorithm. So let's call it path divide and conquer. Again, takes the same arguments. So again, we will need to compute the number of nodes. And now what we will use is an auxiliary function that what it does is test this stronger condition, whether there is a path from one node to another in at most k steps. So in particular, if there is a path from S to T, there needs to be a path from S to T in at most the number of nodes minus one steps, because that's the longest path we can have without repeating nodes. So we just return the result of calling path of length, and this is a path from S to T of length number of nodes minus one. Where we define the auxiliary function, and we want this time a path from B to B prime of length at most L, and we use this intuition here, precisely this. So what are our cases? If L equals 0, then the answer is whether B and B prime are the same. If they are the same, we return true. If they are different, we return false. This is the first case. Otherwise, if if B prime is a successor, immediate successor of B, we are in the second case, we can return true already. Otherwise, we are in the third case, and we need to do a search for the element u. So we can iterate over all the nodes. And well, for each node, Let's compute first. What is L half? And then we need to do these two recursive tests. If there is a path of length L prime from V to U, and there is a path of length, the length here is L minus L prime, just to make the arrow case, from U to B prime, then we are done. We have found a path of length at most L from V to B prime. And if after the four we find no solution, we know there is no path. Is it clear how the algorithm goes? We are doing a divide and conquer on the length of the path. So now we need to verify that the space complexity of this algorithm is okay. So first we need to check. Now it may be not so obvious that the square root of the size of G can be computed in at most that complexity, but this is okay. This can in fact be computed in only logarithmic space. So to see this, so we can use, for instance, the naive algorithm that does a linear search, tries with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc., multiplying, squaring it, and comparing with the result until the best solution is found. So we can do this with a linear search. The logarithm of, so what's the size of the solution? Well, the size of the solution is the number of bits that we require for this, which is just the logarithm of the size of the matrix to 1/2, and this is 1/2 of the logarithm. So this is the size of the solution, and we will need to perform many multiplications of numbers of this magnitude. But multiplications can be done in logarithmic space or even in constant space. If we were very naive and used the school method we saw at the very beginning, doing all the multiplications, keeping them in memory at the same time and then adding them together, that would be really naive. But even then, the space complexity would be log squared, because we have a log in each row, and we have a log for how many rows. So that would be work also, but that's not even necessary. or even constant space. This is annoying, but once we start saving resources, we need to check even the most basic operations. Now, this is a recursive algorithm. What we need to check first is how deep can the recursion go? And we can see that the recursion goes as many times as we can divide by 2 the number of nodes. So that's at most logarithm of the number of nodes times. So again, the recursion depth is at most again, because it's precisely this. And now you did this as an exercise. You know that when implementing recursion using a stack, you need to save local variables in the stack. So the question is how many variables you need to keep in each position of the stack frame? Well, we need to keep L, B, U, and B prime. Am I missing anyone? So the stack frame will need to hold the 5 variables, B, B prime, L, L prime, and U. That's 5 variables. And we also need, if we did it in a RAM machine, we would need the return address. Here, what we need to know is which of the 2 recursive calls we have just executed, the one on the left-hand side of the conjunction or the one on the right-hand side. Knowing that is enough to know how the execution needs to continue running. So we need one additional bit for status, or what would be return address. So each frame of the recursion stack needs to hold five variables. Namely, B, B prime, U, L, L prime, plus our return address, which is a constant. And how large can these variables be? Well, in the worst case, the largest value each can hold is the number of nodes. And for that, we need this many bits. So each variable needs 5 variables. If we have log size of the matrix recursion frames, and in each frame we have a constant 5 or 3 whatever logarithm of g space, the overall space we need is log squared. It's okay. So what we have so far, we have two ways of solving path. One, the standard algorithm, polynomial time, linear space. Now we have an additional algorithm that can solve it also in polynomial time. It will take more time than with the most efficient algorithm, but we are saving space. We require a square of the logarithm. As I said, it is not known whether we can do better or not. That's an open problem. And we will also see in the upcoming weeks that if you are able to show that path is in L, that path can be solved with only logarithmic space, then you are effectively proving that L equals P, which would be a very, very nice result. So at the moment, this is the best we can say. If we stay on the deterministic world, if we are willing to use non-determinism, then we can actually do a little better. This was already shown last week. So we can have a non-deterministic machine that solves path using only logarithmic space. Now we will show again the argument, essentially because we changed the representation, so we need to check that this works for this representation. Now, the algorithm to showing that path is in NL is relatively straightforward. In the end, we will show another algorithm, non-deterministic, which is not that straightforward. So it's good, I think, to try to get some intuitions on how to program these non-deterministic computers. We are computer scientists, we are programmers, we should be able to program whatever crazy machine or language we learn. The thing with non-deterministic computers is that at first they seem something esoterical. I mean, like one tends to believe that there are no such thing as non-deterministic machines. That's not true. So for instance, I don't know, I have my wireless router at home. I'm sure it runs a Linux inside or something like that. And now and then I get home, I plug the computer, it doesn't work, so I need to go reset it, and suddenly it works. Sometimes it doesn't work, I need to reset it twice, and then it works. So that's non-determinism. We are pretty used to it, and it means precisely that we can do the same, run the same program twice, and perhaps get different results. Of course, that's not what I want from a router, but that's what I got. It's really easy to program to have an interpreter for a non-deterministic programming language. It doesn't need to be a Turing machine. It can be something that looks like a RAM, some imperative language with one instruction that corresponds to flipping a coin, and where you can write something like x equals flip, and the result can be either 0 or 1. You don't know. And you can actually implement this as an interpreter. What's the semantics of this? How does this behave? Well, when you run it and you reach this instruction, a coin is flipped or something like that, and according to the result, the execution follows. What will happen? Well, you may run the program several times and get different results, but that's not that bad, or yes, but at least it's usable. So what one does with these non-deterministic computers? Let's say you have an implementation for SAT with a non-deterministic machine, very efficient. It's a polynomial time. So for a certain formula, you want to know if it's satisfiable. So you give it to your implementation, and you run it. And after a while, you get no answer. So what do you do? Well, what I do with my router, you just reset it and run it again. After a while, you get no answer. What you do? Well, you run it again. What are the possible outcomes of this rerunning the program? Eventually, I get the answer yes, satisfiable. And I say, oh, cool, that means that the answer was really satisfiable. Or it could be that the formula is not satisfiable. What will happen then is that I will keep pressing reset until the end of the times and never get any other answer. So that's how non-deterministic decision procedures work. And once you realize that, the important thing being that you only care about answering yes when you know that the answer is yes, and that you can just abort, loop forever, whatever, when you don't know, then programming these kind of things is actually relatively fun. What you just do is go ahead, guess when you want to guess. The only thing you need to keep in mind is that you need to detect when you've been guessing wrong. And in that case, since you don't want to give a wrong answer, once you detect you messed up with the guessing, you just abort, hang, loop, whatever you do. That's the only insight one needs to have. And with that, the rest is more or less normal. So let's do again this proof. So the idea, again, intuitively, is that we want to know if we can reach T from S. So what do we do? Well, starting with S, we guess one successor that will take us to T. And given that successor, we guess another possible successor that takes us to that will take us to T, et cetera, et cetera. If we've already guessed as many successors as the number of nodes, and we didn't arrive to T, we can just assume that we've been guessing the wrong way and abort. If at some point we guess a possible successor for S or for some node, and it turns out it's not a real successor, they are not connected in the graph, bad luck, we just abort. The important thing is that there's a possible way of guessing that will lead us to the right solution, and that we don't give we never answer yes when it's not the case that the node is reachable. So how this works then? We are given this problem. We can first check whether they are equal. We take this simple case early. Now, if this is not the case, then we need to have at least, we need to give at least one step to reach T. So then what we do? Again, we will need the number of nodes. And we will use an additional variable V, which holds intuitively the current node we are visiting in our non-deterministic walk through the path from S to T. And initially, the first node is S. And now we will iterate we will guess nodes, at most the number of nodes minus one times. That's how many steps we need to do in the worst case. If after doing this we didn't find T, we don't need to keep looking. And at each step, what we do? Well, we guess the candidate, a possible successor for B. So we non-deterministically choose B prime from the set of nodes. How can we choose B prime? Well, we just flip the coin logarithmic number of times, and with the output of the coin, we decide which value of which bit gets a 1 and which bit gets a 0. So we non-deterministically choose B prime. And now, if it happened that we choose a node that it's not connected, then that was a bad guess, and we just abort. This execution of the non-deterministic machine won't help. Otherwise, if what we guessed was T, and there was a path from B to T, then by construction we found our path. So then we can answer true. And otherwise, this is our B prime, is our new candidate, our new actual node, and we iterate. So this algorithm will only answer yes if it was able to find, to guess a path that led us to T. So again, what's the space analysis for this? Well, we already saw that this can be computed in log space. This is okay. Now we use how many variables? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, we use 4 variables. And each variable can hold at most this value, which is needs logarithmic many bits. So we use 4 variables. number of nodes, b, b prime, and k. Oh yes, I'm not counting S and T. S and T are part of the input, and this is not a recursive algorithm. So, and each can hold number of nodes as largest value. Hence, we need 4 times 1/2 times log of G space. And this is for the variables. Now, also for this here, for indexing the matrix, we will need to use some counters. So first, we need to find what position in the array holds the first element of row B. So for that, we will need a counter that skips of number of nodes from G V times, but that's not a problem. So indexing G, we'll need linear space, but with respect to B and B prime. So this is okay. And as I said, choosing non-deterministically a value needs no space. We just flip a coin this many times. So overall, the space usage is log here, log here, constant here, log here. Now, one small corollary. Here in this algorithm, we are walking through a non-deterministic path at most this many times. But we could put an upper bound if we wanted on the length of the path and add it as a parameter. So we could think of the problem of whether we can reach T from S in at most 3 steps. And then we have to put a 3 here as the upper bound, or in 5 steps, or in I steps for some parameter I. So what this shows is that there's a slightly more general problem, which is also in NL, and that is finding whether there is a path of bounded length from S to T. So this gives us a small corollary, which we will use shortly, that the problem that let's call bounded path, like path with a less than or equal here, namely given G, S, T, and a value I, deciding if there is a path of length at most I between S and T in G. This problem bounded path is also in NL. we just also receive I here, and we bound the number of iterations by I. So, as you see, programming non-deterministic machines is usually about guessing and verifying. We guess something and try to verify that we guessed right. In the case of something like satisfiability, we guess the evaluation that satisfies the formula and need to verify that that's the case. For a path, we need to guess the path and verify that the path is correct. Now, if we take something like the complement of path, the problem of deciding if there is no path from S to T in a certain graph. In that case, it's not that clear what the guessing can be, what guessing and verification we can do. Just like it's not known for the case of satisfiability, what can we guess that is short and easy to verify for unsatisfiability? But surprisingly, or at least for me, surprising, we can decide also the complement of path with a non-deterministic machine in logarithmic space. So let's write this more precisely. The complement of path, that is the problem of given G, S, and T, deciding if there is no path from S to T. This problem is also in NL. And this is perhaps the most surprising result for this class, and it will have some, for me at least, surprising consequences that we will see on Friday. So how do we go solving this problem in a non-deterministic machine? Well, the idea will be as follows. We will do it in two steps. First, let's assume that magically we know how many nodes are reachable from S. Let's say that is given to us. We know that from S we can reach in total 7 nodes. Okay, let's assume that is given. Can we use that to realize that T is not reachable from S? Well, yes, we could do as follows. What we need to do is find 7 nodes, 7 different nodes, which are reachable from S, none of which is T. So if we knew that only 7 are reachable and we found 7 and none of them is T, then we know that T is not reachable from S. That's good. Now, in principle, we cannot guess the 7 nodes at the same time. We need to guess them one by one. But if at any point we guess the wrong node, it's okay. We just abort and hope that at some other time we are able to guess the right node. So this in principle gives us a grip on the problem. That is, how to solve it, assuming that we know how many nodes are reachable from S. So let's start with this easy case. So, well, as usual, we start with the boilerplate. Now, let's assume that this value, the number of nodes reachable from S, is given to us. In particular, that we can compute it somehow. So this is assumed to exist. Then we need to verify that it actually can be done. So assuming this, then, as I said, we need to find these many different nodes reachable from S, none of which has to be T. So we just iterate over all the nodes. And we exclude from this iteration T. Now, for each node we get, we must guess whether that node is one of the ones that is reachable or not. So we choose whether we skip, we do nothing, we assume that node B is not one of the reachable, or I will write this as follows. I will say that we assert that GSV is in path. So what it means, we are using the non-deterministic algorithm for testing whether something is in path or not. And the idea is that if we guess that B must be, but it doesn't, this test will fail, will abort. This execution of the Turing machine will fail altogether. That's okay for us. That means that we guessed wrong. But if we didn't fail, then we know that we have found one of the successors. We count it as one. And in the end, assuming we were able to go through this loop somehow without aborting, we need to check whether we found all the successors. It could have been that we, every time, we just choose to skip and didn't test anything. So we need to be sure that we test them all. So in the end, so after the four, if the count is different from what was expected, we just abort. We found out that the guessing we did was wrong. We were missing some possible successor. Otherwise, if everything went well, we return true. And the only way we return true is if we knew how many nodes were reachable. We found that many nodes reachable. None of them was T. So T cannot be reachable from S. The space analysis of this part, assuming this is given, this needs, again, this is easy. We need only three variables. That is the number of nodes, whether it's reachable or not. Well, actually, it's four, right? Number of nodes, reachable, count, and B, yes. Four variables, number of nodes, number reachable, count, and V. Each has, or each needs, logarithmic many bits. We use path, which is known to be in NL. So now we need to show that the only missing part, namely this function, can be also be computed using logarithmic space. And so what this means? It means that we can find a function, non-deterministic function, that may fail. It's OK if it fails. But if it doesn't fail, whenever it doesn't fail, the output is the number of reachable nodes. And we should be sure that there's always some way in which it doesn't fail. So what's the idea? The idea is as follows. We can try to, the number of reachable nodes corresponds to the number of reachable nodes in at most number of nodes minus one steps. And it's easy to compute how many nodes are reachable in zero steps, exactly one. Well, bad luck. So there's only one node reachable in zero steps. And what we need to show then is that if we know how many nodes are reachable in I steps, we can non-deterministically find out how many nodes are reachable in I plus one steps. By an inductive argument, that will mean that we can do it for all I. And what we will do is a similar idea to the one we did for the extreme case where we are just interested about T. We will use what we know about what is reachable in I steps to count how many are reachable in I plus one. So this is the function we want to show. Again, boilerplate. This variable will give us count will give us intuitively how many nodes are reachable from S in at most I steps, or I minus one. So let's record this. The invariant will be that count is number of nodes reachable in less than I steps. So we know the value for less exactly than I steps, and we want to know how many are reachable in at most I steps. So what we can do is count for every node whether it's reachable in I plus one steps, in at most I steps or not. And to do that, we need to just verify if it's one of the successors of the nodes reachable in less than I steps. And using the same trick as there, we can also decide when it's not the successor of any of those nodes. So we need to count how many of the nodes reachable in at most I steps have been seen already. As I said, we need to iterate over all nodes. And for each of them, we need to count how many of these we have already seen. And we also want to know whether B was found to be one of the successors of all these nodes. So what we do now is try to guess all the elements reachable in at most I steps. And we do as we did there. For each of them, we choose whether this is one of these or not. If we choose that it is one of the successors, then we need to verify it. And to verify it, we can use the bounded version of path. So we need to verify that G S U I minus 1 is in the bounded version of path. This is in NL, that's okay. So now we have seen one of those nodes. And if it happens that V is the successor of one of these nodes reachable in at most I steps, then V is reachable in at most I steps. So if B is reachable, then we record a fact. And then after this for, if found B was false, but the number seen was different from we probably need to store this value here before using it. So because we'll be updating count. So if this is different between the count in the previous iteration. Then we need to abort. We don't know anything, whether B is reachable in at most I steps or not. We didn't find a predecessor, but we also didn't scan all the nodes. So in this case, we abort. And otherwise, if found B was true, and we saw all the predecessors, then we can increase the count. And so the structure is very similar to this one, just we need to do it more times, one for each V. And again, the number of variables is fixed. We don't allocate memory, so this is in NL. Okay, so we stop for today and take it from here on Friday.